Saturday.
What day is it today?
Wednesday.
Exactly.
Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falkenstein from Falcon Screen, and we are
there it is. Feedback taken on board.
Yeah, it was pointed out to me that my namesake film side is more similar to another enunciation of my name, which is often used by members of my family. So I've encouraged and will now continue to do so because it makes more literal
from
sense.
Falcon Screen.
This will forever be the correct pronunciation or the preferred pronunciation.
Yeah. But you were allowed to call you Glenn Falkenstein in other contexts, but just in the Film Fight Club intro.
All members of my family will thus be happy.
Yeah.
And also, we also have Chris Evans, Sydney filmmaker.
Hey, yo.
Freelance writing critic for Art Nehru.
Hello, hello.
And joining us, co-founder and manager of Static Vision Sydney and Melbourne and around the world, Felix Hubble.
Hey, that's me.
Static Vision International.
Oh, please, no.
Static Visionary.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, keep going.
Static at all. So, Static Vision, it just happened, Dreamscapes. We've talked about it in the past couple of weeks, but tell us, Pink Flamingo, if you had a wonderful week and an encore screening, how did it go?
Yeah, it all went really well. Big success on paper, but also spiritually. I had a really good time. I think people kind of had a really good time. I think it's kind of heartening to see so many people come out and watch sort of weird movies in such big numbers, like post-COVID.
The turnout was genuinely impressive from someone not involved in
the
organization.
Yeah.
And just such a good vibe. People hadn't seen in ages. A lot of just interesting Sydney creative films. A lot of people in the film community.
Yeah,
that's absolutely true. It was good to come to us to hang out.
Yeah, definitely. And like we got a nice mix of different people on each of the days as well. And the encore was a bunch of different faces too. So, great success for us, but also on a personal level, I just think it's cool that it looks like things are going to be thriving and kicking off properly once Sydney Film Festival's back and, you know, August 8th on that one. And then, everything else, like the Sydney Sci-Fi Film Festival, big shouts, obviously. Every other sort of festival event in Sydney that is Sydney-focused, I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah, hopefully MIF doesn't mean that we're all miffed after that, but we'll see. We'll wait and find out.
There's a crossover with the Sydney Film Festival we discussed. We're covering both come the entire month of August.
We'll try.
Speaking of local film events, just a couple of things in news in the week. The German Film Festival is ongoing now, and Melbourne's open mic film night, Filmonic, which is streaming online in New South Wales and elsewhere, is having its event tomorrow night. You can still get some flicks in, and Static Vision.
We will have announced by this time, assuming I push it out. If not, this is an exclusive for you. But we're coming to Melbourne. Dreamscapes will be at the Lido Cinemas from July 15th to 18th. We're going to have a couple of extra films in there, and that means we'll also be bringing a couple of extra films to Sydney.
Very cool.
Nice. Will those be just Lido's showing beautiful. At the Palace screenings or something, or Pink Flamingo?
Absolutely TBA. I would say probably Pink Flamingo, unless they're really, really big, in which case it might pop out to Ritz or something, but we'll work it out later.
Sweet.
I love Lido. It's where first place I go, then in the Astor whenever I go to Melbourne.
Yeah. Sister cinema of the Ritz now.
Yep.
Yeah, Lido, it's a really great space. Like,
it is, yeah.
I feel like people kind of perceive it as tricky to get to because it's in the east, and most people are in the north, or at least in my circles. But yeah, it's like 15 minutes from a city, door to door from my place now, which is psycho. It's just they're really cool. They're gonna let us fully deck the place out and do some really cool stuff with it. So I'm really excited to hang out there.
Yeah, been to a few festivals there, but I'm keen. Like I'm gonna go down to Melbourne soon. I love Northcote and that part of the world, but south around the Astor, around St Kilda, it's pretty great.
I've only heard good things about how the Lido people are to work with. So big ups to the Lido.
Oh, incredible people to work with. Been super accommodating of us, and also I really do love what they've done with the site since the renos. I think it was like 10 years ago or whatever, but it's a really, really, cool site. Big fan.
And you've become an honorary Sydney person now, given that you split your time between Sydney and Melbourne. So welcome back to your former land.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm mostly Melbourne, so apologies to everyone. But this is like an international guest today.
Yeah.
Basically. No, you're one of us.
The COVID equivalent.
Static Vision International CEO.
We were out last week at a bar, we ran into you, so you are from Sydney. Like, you are a local.
Yeah.
But he's a local because he's actually from Sydney. Like, you don't need to get that technical.
Yeah.
It's ours, Melbourne. We're sorry.
With the loosening of the borders, I'm out of my 8-month lockdown or whatever it was in Melbourne. So, I'm coming back a little bit, back and forth.
Yeah. So, and you're here because we're going to be discussing Woman in the Window later in the program.
Yeah.
Your favorite.
Oh, look, I'm so passionate about this film.
Yeah.
Not particularly in any way. I'm just passionate about the existence, that it is a film that exists and is on Netflix.
Yeah, and just in general, windows and women in the windows.
Big fan of women, big fan of windows. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Please don't misinterpret that, listeners. So, I just watched Hollow Man and, oh God.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm a big fan of Hollow Man.
Not
my personal style, but yeah.
Definitely making this less weird, Glenn.
Yeah. Okay.
It was not a weird comment at all, and now it's been taken to very strange and
look, if there's any
places.
Women out there in the window, don't worry. I'm averting my eyes. I'm just right. A big fan of Netflix originals existing.
Right.
Not really, but like theoretically, yeah.
We'll get to it later, but it's interestingly not a Netflix original.
Well,
actually.
No, it's a Fox 2000. I'm a big fan of Fox 2000. I'm a big fan of their closure. Yep. And
Yeah.
But we are talking Netflix because the first thing we're talking about, as promised, is Zack Snyder's new film produced with Deborah Snyder, Army of the Dead. Long awaited. It is streaming on Netflix. It is exactly what it sounds like. It stars Dave Bautista and an Ocean's 11 of zombie killers, hunters. And it is about, essentially, Las Vegas has been walled off because of a zombie event. It is occupied entirely by zombies, and some folks who go in, the US government, in their eternal wisdom, have decided to nuke it.
On the 4th of July for a cool fireworks show.
Apparently the president's universe says something to the effect of, this is awesome, it's going to be totally cool. We know what they're aping here.
Yeah. Say it's Trump without saying it's Trump.
And this crew, knowing this, a lot of money in a vault in Vegas, and knowing that if they get in and get out, their crime will forever be, any evidence thereof will forever be obliterated by the nuclear bomb, they decide, we're going to go in and make some cash. Felix, what do we think?
Yeah, it's okay. You know, look, I quite like Zack Snyder on occasion. Probably earlier, Snyder's more my jam. I do really like Watchmen. But yeah, this was an interesting one because I did quite like his Dawn of the Dead remake as well. And for all the stuff I would normally criticize a film like this about being too long, at 2 hours and 16 minutes or whatever it is, it doesn't actually feel that long. It's pretty briskly paced. I do think that it still has the signature. I don't know. The subtext is a bit too obvious on certain stuff and a bit lacking in areas where it should be. It's got a bit of a muddy palette, whatever else. But, you know, all things considered, didn't mind it. I was okay.
Yeah, needed more needle drops, essentially. Yeah.
Oh, the last thing I needed was needle drops. The song choices were terrible. The covers were terrible.
Okay.
Except for the wonderful Cranberries cover, which should not have been in the movie. Zombie is a protest song.
No. I think it's the exact opposite. The Cranberries cover was bad.
It's not a Cranberries cover. It's from the 2017 acoustic album, something else.
Okay.
It's actually the Cranberries.
Okay, the Cranberries zombie thing, to get ahead of that, because it's all everyone's complaining about with this film.
Right.
Where people are like, oh, but zombie's actually about the IRA and da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Big fan of the IRA.
Now we have Fight and Film Fight Club.
Okay, sure. Like, that's what it was written about. But Zombie is actually a song that people slur when they're drunk at bars. At this point, actually this song's about the IRA almost seems like a little bit like trying to hold on to something that's already lost.
But
it's a song that a whole bunch of people rocked out to when it came out, not knowing a thing about what it was really about.
Yes, but right? You just generally rock out to it. It's not actually about zombies. That's a stretch to say it is in fact about a zombie
virus.
I'm
not saying it's in fact about a zombie, but I still thought it was funny that Zack Snyder used it.
I would say that shameless. It does in fact have the word zombie in it, though. And we're watching a zombie movie and
it also has the word bombs.
Yeah,
and it's a zombie movie involving bombs.
And this is part of my issue with Zack Snyder's stuff in general. It's like, yeah, I am watching a zombie movie with bombs in it, but I got that from what you showed me on screen.
All
I
his needle drops are always that.
I
mean, it just shows how passionate we are about this movie that instead of talking about the movie, we're talking about the song.
And the Cranberries, who are wonderful and much better artists. No, that's not fair. Zack Snyder has made some excellent films discussed in the past few weeks, and I like a lot of things about it.
Like Guardians, The Legends of Gahul.
I haven't seen that. That's the only Zack Snyder movie I haven't seen yet.
I would say this is probably one of his better ones, I think. I did actually quite like the Snyder Cut. This has interesting parallels to the Snyder Cut. One thing I really did notice about it is in Snyder Cut, they spend like 2 hours putting the team back together, and this does have 45 minutes of like each person getting brought back together. And I think I actually kind of like that.
Yeah,
I did too. Yeah. I actually really like Snyder's slow pacing, which seems to be really pissing a lot of people off. But I'm okay with it. Like, what's weird about the pacing of this film is, given that it's so basic, it shouldn't play as well as it does over nearly 2.5 hours.
It
goes by quickly. I didn't feel it dragging, even though there's nothing new in the script. I don't know what it is that makes this movie so watchable. I think it's how sincere Snyder is.
He's so blatantly efficient in how he handles exposition, setting up the characters. There are about 10 of them, and we get to know about each of them. It's extraordinarily fun how they do that. Also, we know how the main characters value them because of the increasingly smaller amounts of money they offer them, which is a funny gag.
Actually one of the most interesting things about the movie, how people, you know, are sort of like, yeah, sure, $250,000.
Yeah, sure, $50,000.
I feel like more could have been done with the Vegas setting, both in terms of, you know,
iconography, simply.
There's some great moments. Like, the opening sequence uses Vegas better than pretty much all of the rest of the film.
Agreed. I also think the opening sequence is better than the rest of the film.
There's an animal where Vegas is, I think, better deployed. Again, Vegas iconography.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's not very, it's not, despite what the poster portrays, it's not a very neon movie. It doesn't really have a lot of casino floor iconography, and I get that it's like decaying and stuff, but it looks like a filter as opposed to dust and but death.
I think the part of the problem is production design in terms of how much is there in focus.
I think actually almost all of it's there. I think that Snyder's choices, a lot of people I've spoken to, including you and including
we'll get to the canon dreamland and whatever works or not.
A lot of people are saying like, oh, he's just hiding that this is all green screen. Apparently not.
It looks more real than most of his films, and it's rewarding in that way.
Yeah, I have to say as well on that, I totally forgot the Chris D'Elia stuff.
Yeah. And there's only one shot where you can tell that he's been replaced, and it's the hardest shot to match because the camera's pulling back.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the only time I could tell.
It was well handled.
Some of the most impressive CGI you've seen in decades. just on that. Not in the film in general. There's some pretty bad, dicey stuff in there now and then. Although, yeah, I do like that. Okay, so as I see it, like, a lot of CGI stuff sort of kind of stalled around, like, Life of Pi time. We haven't really moved beyond that.
And that, you know, when I think of Life of Pi and CGI, I think about the VFX studio going under.
Completely.
After they
won. Yeah, like,
That's the moment when the cost of CGI became the hurdle as opposed to technological advancements.
Yeah, exactly. And what I really appreciate about this, and what I sort of appreciate about the Snyder Cut, which, again, I've got, like, huge issues with Snyder Cut, but it kind of works for what it's doing. Zack Snyder is just as concerned with the emotion of the film and the flow of the script and everything else as he is in making each element look correct. Like, there's been conscious decisions in Army of the Dead to obscure the replacement of Chris D'Elia with Tignataro. There's other stuff that just, like, lets the CGI stuff, like CGI blood splatter and all like that, just feel more organic in the way they've graded on top of that. And
we noticed it comparing the Whedon to the Snyder color grades.
Totally.
You could see that his desaturated style is designed to make an almost entirely green screen film work. He's figured that out since 300.
Completely. And it really works here. And it's an interesting counterpoint to the film we're going to discuss a little bit later.
The general saturation, it works quite well. I like the color. Most of it's filmed during the day. The bits that are in low light, in interior, I can see what's going on to the film's credit.
Okay, so to discuss the dream lens that Virat alluded to, because I think the cinematography is one of the most interesting things about this film, for better or worse.
And Zach was himself the cinematographer.
He was the DP, because he decided, he fell in love with this lens he'd acquired for his Leica, right? A 60s exotic Canon rangefinder lens. And he got it cinemodded when Red gave him a camera to play with. And he decided that he loved the rendering that it goes to when you open it wide open to f/0.95. So if you don't know photography, f/0.95 is ridiculously wide aperture, extreme shallow depth of field.
It was used for René Sans painting Callback and several other tableaus within this film, which were some of the best parts.
Okay, so the lens at f/0.95, like a lot of exotic lenses, introduces some weird visual qualities So there's a little bit of a ghosting effect and some haloing around lights and stuff like that. Snyder decided he wanted that look, which goes away when you stop the lens down, for the whole film, and that no other DP would accept those kinds of conditions, so he decided to shoot it himself.
Yeah, king.
Yeah, sometimes it looks really cool. I think the approach to lighting, where he's shot this film pretty roughly, used minimal lighting, it actually looks really good. It gives it this raw, rough around the edges kind of vibe, which suits a zombie film, right? It makes it in some ways feel like a lower budget film than it is. Like when I don't know if it's just conditioning, but when I see all this shallow depth of field stuff, I look at that and I go, oh yeah, amateur film shot on Canon 5D. People are trying to go cinematic by making the depth of field as shallow as possible. Mm. Sometimes it looks really cool. Like it is a unique look. Mm. But other times it creates that feeling that they're hiding a lack of production design, when I think there's actually a lot there. And as much as it might create a visual inconsistency between some shots, if you were to sacrifice these wide open characteristics, which are the sort of thing you see in a stills lens, but not in a cinema lens, because cinema lenses are designed to be consistent between shots. I think it still would have been better if he'd stopped the damn thing down. You know, not, it kind of forces everything into close up when the depth of field is that narrow.
And I think that's one of my bigger issues with the film, in that it leads to his style of pacing, in that he's more focused, rather than maintaining a momentum of action, on generating a few key images that are going to stay with you. These things that you take away for the trailers, you're going to remember.
There's some good ones here.
There's some great ones, no question. Justice League, both versions had that too. It worked in the latter because the film was just so long, it had so many of these, and felt like more of a complete film. Here, I can recall about 10 or more of these moments, and they are great, but they stand in contrast and stark outside the story rather than an endemic part of it. And that's a lot of the problem I have with the style and pacing of this movie.
Yeah, and also on that note, a lot of those moments are using CG, and the Dream lens has such shallow depth of field, but the CG is all deep focus, so they don't look visually consistent. Simulating what the Dream lens was doing in CG would probably add a lot more budget to this thing than Netflix was going to throw at it. But
also, in comparing with action choreography, I mean, if you have especially zombie sequences which require fast cuts and editing, it's very inconsistent. Which the kind
when you can't see much in the shot,
yeah, it's rather cleanly shot and cut a zombie film, relatively speaking.
Look, when we were talking earlier about the lack of like the floors in Vegas, and you know, using the spaces that Vegas provides, the one scene that really does it, which you've seen in all the trailers with Dave Bautista running across the tables, was really cool action, right?
Oh, it was great.
That was one of, like, that's the thing about Zack Snyder. He knows how to stage an action scene. That was just so clean. It was John Wick style action, but much more visceral in terms of the camera placement and the handheld movements going on. It had much better sense of energy than those films on Nobody provided, that same kind of like gunplay.
Yeah, I think that's maybe like ultimately my issue with Zack Snyder, is I think he's incredibly talented, but mostly I don't vibe with the film. So it's stuff like the action scenes will be perfect, or have this great look, or there's this great concept behind it. I'm really glad that he is kind of making films and people are supporting that. And obviously it doesn't always sit particularly well with critics, but it's like he, for better or worse, like he's the true vulgar auteur, as people kind of discuss it with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like, it's almost like my issue with some of the John Wick stuff, where I think those guys are way better stunt coordinators than they are directors. And it's like, yeah, in this film, there's all this stuff I love about it, and it would be so incredible if I could love the film as much as I enjoy elements.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Like some of the images around the zombie king character and the queen and stuff and the tiger, all of that's really cool. You know, the moment that he takes to look at like flowing blinds for a few moments just to set the pace of the scene. Mm. Awesome, right? Yeah, some of those like tableaus there, but this is just one of many subplots that could have been delved into a lot more. That whole I Am Legend type idea of the organized zombies is awesome, right?
Yeah.
But why didn't we have more of that and less sort of by the numbers?
Yeah. Or conversely, why didn't you remove that and go more by the numbers?
Right, exactly.
For a shorter runtime.
It's just imbalanced. It's
either, yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think that's where it works really well on Justice League, the Snyder Cut, because it is completely imbalanced, and it's like honestly and openly imbalanced, but it means that everything that should be there is there, and the only stuff that kind of lulls is stuff that came from the original cut that was bad anyway, but it's like you're not going to reshoot it. Just reuse these dumb one-liners that don't fill in place. Yeah, I have to say, sorry, I'm totally interrupting. Vera, I was ready to say something, but I do have to say I really, really liked it. This is these are the sort of projects that I think streaming services should be funding. Is the Snyder Cut? Is Army of the Dead? Is this stuff that doesn't necessarily need to exist in the cinema? It can be sprawling. It can be for your TV. It can be for your streaming.
And goes on as
the
Irishman. And it goes on as it needs to, even though the epilogue for this film was unnecessary and too long. It could have been a couple of minutes. It was all of like 10 minutes.
He did the same goddamn thing.
It was way too long. And it doesn't. It just at this point, the arc for the film, the arc for the characters had ended. It didn't need this aha moment. An aha moment is minutes. It doesn't need to be as lengthy as it was in this case.
It's the same damn frustrating thing he did with the Snyder Cut, where the story's over, but he robs you of the ability to have a sense of completion by, you know, giving you the after the credits stuff before the credits roll after like 5 seconds of black.
I liked it in Justice League.
I actually kind of did too.
It's a proof of concept, and it's like the film that's never going to get made, whatever. I know heaps of people ragged on it online.
I liked it too.
I think we've finally hit the nail on the head in terms of like what the actual problem with the film is. Zach is great in doing one perfect shot moment. Like, there are a lot of still images which would make for great, oh my God, let me take a screenshot, and this is a great wallpaper for my wall or something for whatever teenage goth emo kid is watching. But when you look at the coherence and storytelling and screenplay and looking at a narrative which can actually give you the kind of payoff they're expecting from even a genre film, I don't think it is doing its service to its own genre in that sense.
But I think what does do it a bit service is that unlike most zombie films, and it's not entirely clear, but there's a relatively clear approach to the rules of this universe. What the zombie hierarchy, I like the I Am Legend approach. I like the different levels of zombies. I think the upper tier of zombies was a little unclear as to what extent they were powerful. But I thought the lore around zombies, and especially how we are first introduced to them, is much better in this than in a lot of other movies, including how we introduced the zombies in one of my all-time favorite zombie thrillers, Danny Boyle film. Danny Boyle's greatest approach to this in 28 Days Later.
To talk a bit about the plot of this thing, a lot of it's lifted from Aliens, right? A lot of the, like, the company man who wants to grab the DNA, you know, that made sense in Aliens in a way that it kind of doesn't here. But, you know, sure, okay. I guess that zombies are a great
idea. Send along your representative.
You need a twist that you know is going to be a twist at some point in the movie.
Yeah. The helicopter pilot, like, they're like, oh, they're all hibernating. Like, there's so many parts of this.
And it led to one of the best action scenes because it didn't, something involving the zombies, let's just say, and that approach to how they could function that didn't expect. It was great.
But I think Zack Snyder just needs to, you know, write the story and have someone else write the script, because like the emotional core stuff of this is frighteningly terrible. Right. But the thing is, like, when I say it's surprising how much I didn't mind this, and I'm not sure what it is, I guess it's just Snyder's handle of visuals and his sincerity, you know, and that it's not just, doesn't just feel like a corporate product as clumsy as it is, because like, man, some of the things he's trying fall so flat. Like any, like there's this kind of quality that I associate with a Netflix film now, where everything's just allowed to be loose, everything's just allowed to like hang a bit and go on too
and everything
long.
Is flattened, right? You know, there is a consistency in how everything is flat, in the sense like it needs to be smoothed over. I guess in that sense this is still a pretty raw film. The fact that you can see inconsistencies makes it kind of fresh and leap out of the page.
I wonder if that's the thing that's giving it that lack of a corporate feel that I'm talking about, that it is a bit loose like that, and that the cinematography does go to like low budget run and gun kind of styles of lighting and things like that. But like, the scenes with Bautista talking to his daughter and like the setup of like the refugee camp and stuff, it's a cool world. It's interesting enough, but it's so badly written. And the scenes, those scenes just go on for a really long time. I again got that like amateur filmmaking kind of vibe with some of the scenes between Scott Bautista and his daughter, where it kind of feels like they're improving and the actors are looking for an approach, and Snyder's just let it all play out in the final cut.
Yeah, I feel the political elements to this, they're pretty broadly drawn. There's enough that makes it relevant. I wish it had gone into whether it be the immigration focus, whether it be actually to the extent that the COVID-19 pandemic is relevant in the context of how some of the action plays out. but it's very surface level, but they are trying to cover a lot here. I'm touching on the father-daughter relationship, like Justice League. There's a lot of elements to this that are sadly meta-textual. We discussed we discussed Justice League, the great tragedy in Zack and Deborah Snyder's life. I think, however, the film works better when you're aware of the meta-textual element. On a pure reading where you aren't familiar with the background to this, I think it is a very broadly drawn drama.
That's right. It wouldn't, if knowing what you know about Zack Snyder, there is an extra emotional level there that is like the ideas aren't communicated well enough on a purely filmmaking basis.
No.
So, do we have anything more to say about the zombie extravaganza?
Nah, if you wanted to see it, you've already seen it. If you didn't, don't.
We're preaching to the converted, we're preaching to the choir. If you love Zack Snyder, you're going to like this.
Maybe.
And maybe. You still will have issues, but you're still going to like it because most of his positives are still there.
You've heard it's terrible and you enjoy zombie movies, and if you enjoy zombie movies, you probably enjoy rough around the edges movies. It's a better than average
zombie film. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you probably like this.
Yeah.
So that is Army of the Dead. It is now streaming on Netflix. You're listening to Film Fight Club on 2SER with Clint Falkenstein, Chris Evans, Varun Nehru, and Felix Hubble from Static Vision. The next one we're talking about is The Woman in the Window.
Yeah, this is.
I wanted to get this out of the way because I'm getting confused with the women in the windows and the girl in the train.
I got it confused
and
too.
And the girls in front of the windows.
When this movie was coming out, I was like, "Hey, didn't that already come out?"
Well, I've read Winds in the Willows, and it's a great story. I don't know what you guys are complaining about.
I love that movie, John Cleese, off charts.
Oh yeah, good stuff.
Eric Carter was the best.
So many post Gone Girl titles and like
Girl the Dragon Tattoo,
Airport Thriller.
They came out separately. I acknowledge.
Look. I thought this was all right. Everyone's hating on it, but and for a good reason a lot of the time. It's a terrible, terrible script. It is such a by-the-numbers thriller. But, it's like Rear Window plus standard, predictable kind of twists for this kind of thing. I dug how it was directed. It's easy to say it's Hitchcockian. It's not really Hitchcockian at all. It's more like everyone who's trying to ape Hitchcock around like the late 70s, early 80s.
It's more Disturbian, I would say. Another film I don't like.
I do not like that film. You're not selling it for me.
But there's some real, like, I'm trying to be like doing a giallo, or I'm trying to do a De Palma type direction. There's some really ludicrously over the top stuff, like blood splatters across the screen as a scene transition.
I like that bit. That was probably my favorite bit in the film.
Yeah, I like that too. There's some cool stuff with color. I like how the framing, Felix was saying earlier, too many things going on in the frame.
Yeah.
But for me, this is one of the few recent movies that's used the wide frame well, where I think the wide frame just looks better if you have multiple things going on in it instead of just like close-ups. I think more movies should be shot in the narrower frame, but that's another rant.
I mean, that doesn't forgive. I mean, that's great. I mean, everything else. But most actors in this film are just kind of phoning it in.
Gary Oldman was so bad.
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing? Even Amy Adams. Like, that is the one thing I feel really sorry about. She's a good actress.
Yeah.
What is she doing in this movie? This is like Nocturnal Animals, but lesser.
Nocturnal Animals is not a bad movie.
The plot of this is that Amy Adams can't leave an apartment. She's looking out the window, and then thriller stuff happens, by the way.
So that's probably important.
She has agoraphobia.
Yeah.
It's also really feels like 2007 again, I would say. There's a like level of sheen and gloss to it. It's probably worth noting this is a film that's been shelved for about 2 years. And back on what I was saying about Army of the Dead and Netflix and what they fund and what they pick up before, this is the sort of film I absolutely don't want going out as a Netflix original, like Annihilation.
Very polished.
Yeah, it should be in a theater or like direct to VOD and then picked up by Netflix later. I really don't like the concept of these sorts of films, even though I hated this one, if I'm being frank. I really don't like the idea of these sorts of films not getting a theatrical run, even if it's like a shitty one or whatever else, or at least kind of being intended for theatrical run. I don't like the repackaging of this stuff as Netflix material because it really feels like someone made a film to screen in film festivals and in the cinema.
It does. I agree with you. But at the end of the day, I think Disney didn't want it.
Yeah, which is fair enough, because it's not very good, but and it's not very Disney. It is very Fox 2000, though. We mentioned a Fox 2000 production. It seems a lot like Fox's not mainline, but kind of off to the side thrillery stuff they used to make in, you know, 2007, 2000s, whatever else. Yeah, look, Amy Adams, she vacillates between giving a great performance and a terrible performance. It's very good in the hysterical woman sort of like canon of that stuff. I think it's a bit closer to some earlier stuff than it is Airport Lit adaptations, even though it is an Airport Lit adaptation. Look, I normally really like Tracy Letts. I really hated the script on this one, unfortunately.
The script is really bad. The twist is really bad.
Yeah.
The twist is
it just obvious or stupid?
Really obvious. Bit of cliche. Yeah. More than kind of cliche.
I see you've seen it before.
You've seen everything in this movie before.
They introduce 6 or 7 characters, and then you're left to work out what the twist could be within that. And there's 2 twists, and they're both what would happen. What are my 3 hypotheses? There's no hypotheses. There's no surprise. Yeah.
But I feel like Joe Wright, who I've never really put, I haven't seen Pan, but I've never considered him as a, in any way kind of like experimental in his approach kind of filmmaker. I feel like he's going wild here, and that's what kept me entertained. It's the use of colors, like I was talking about earlier. The blocking for widescreen actually done really well, I thought.
It's trying too hard to be a B movie.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Like Army of the Dead, we saw something that's genuinely B movie like, and here this is like an A movie that's really trying to be a B movie.
Yeah, it's confused between having that glossy sheen and then also doing, you know, De Palma style blood spatters. So like, you know, pick your boat.
And also having prestige performers in these roles, you know, that we've seen do similar films, most of them, previously. And it's kind of an issue when you try and cash in on that. Although I do wonder, because they did reshoot a bunch of this film after audience notes, it's kind of got a little bit of that feel in the edit.
The ending of this, to me, screams of reshoot.
Yeah.
Not only is it really rushed and dumber than the rest of the movie, but it also feels stylistically different.
Like it's more vicious, almost.
It is, yeah. And I feel like even if Joe Wright directed that part, you know, he's coming at it with a different mindset, probably like a year later. Like, you can feel the difference in the approach.
It feels like that ending, like the film itself feels like you're kind of targeting like later 20s, early 30s, even 40s sort of audiences. And that ending feels like almost teenagers.
Everything becomes becomes the Terminator at the end these days.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. Would I recommend people see it? Yeah. Yeah, I hate it. Watch it.
Can I just say the way that technology was used and filmed in this movie was really cool.
Yes.
I liked the zooming in on the massive, massive grain on the smartphone video, putting that next to...
Yeah, okay. I'll agree with that.
Dark, low-lit Amy Adams. I don't even know that I liked the moment, but the part where Amy Adams takes a photo with her phone and then suddenly it flies up on screen and there's this like zooming picture out of the frame effect. Like, it's a moment that made me say, hang on, what was that? Which is so rare.
Yeah.
Whether it's good or bad, like it's an attempt to represent how we engage with smartphones visually. That I hadn't seen much before, right?
Yeah,
I'd never seen before.
The last time I think that kind of effect was prevalent, and I can think of, is Personal Shopper.
Yes.
Which did a very similar thing in using technology.
But that was just sort of like filming people using phones, whereas this sometimes does that and sometimes tries to like visualize what's on the phone as if it's taking up your entire field of view. Like,
it used it for a spooky effect, especially when the messages came in without realizing in Personal Shopper. So it's doing a similar thing where you're using technology for jump scares. So it's just taking that and then transporting
it. I mean, you know, Static Vision, Golden Boy, Eugene Kotliarenko, Spree, Wolf Palace, whatever else, he's doing his own thing. But it is really cool to see this in like very, like proper budget. This was supposed to be in the
glossy
slate.
glossy movie. It's strange. It's interesting.
This was supposed to be there, like, go on the train or something like that, you know, like October, sell a bunch of tickets sort of movie. Yeah.
I give it props just for being a mainstream film that is trying unusual things visually.
Yeah.
And it looks very good. You know,
I would have liked this in the cinema. I have to say. Yeah. I would have liked it in the cinema. I did not like it on Netflix. Yeah.
Look, it's trashy, but there was, I don't know, I guess a straightforward in the right places and over the top visual experimentation in the right places for me that I basically enjoyed it until the last stretch. It's yeah. I wouldn't say it's a great movie or anything, but like, you know, you take what you get from Hollywood these days. You take what you can get, and this is
the most positive I've seen. This is the most positive I've seen Chris being on middling cinema for a while.
They're two basically okay movies, which are very straight down the line plots, executed a little bit differently from the kind of corporate sheen that's on every major release in the cinemas. So I'm cool with that.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't. I think I like Army of the Dead more, but I probably watch Girl in the Woman in the Window. Oh, sorry, I was going to say Girl on the Train. Or
no, no, but, yeah, but no. I think props for that, actually. I think the girls have migrated to women, so I think they've definitely aged in that regard.
In the last 10 years, yeah, yeah.
Have to age with your audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. Two Netflix releases, kind of different, kind of similar in their thing. But please, for the love of God, any studio listening out here, stop selling completed movies to Netflix. Just fucking dump them on VOD and then get Netflix to pick them up 6 months later. I know you'll make less money, but it's good for everybody. It's the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
When you were saying that this movie has like a edit that made you think this is a result of the reshoots, how was that?
Oh no, just the entire vibe of the movie felt like
it's very lean.
It's lean and it tonally doesn't run together perfectly. It doesn't, it's got that feel of most things that have had reshoots in the, they make what they can work as much as they can, but the edit just feels off. And at first I thought I didn't like the cinematography or the editing, but I actually just think it's some sort of incongruence in studio notes, test audience stuff, and reshot footage inserted back in. I'm sure if I watched it again with an eye to it, I only read that after I'd seen the film, I'd be able to identify it. But right. it's definitely got that feeling to it. Which again, to bring back something we were talking about before, the Snyder Cut has that feeling as well, except it's a different effect. It's the scraps kind of that make the whole, whereas this feels
the Snyder Cut had a consistency to the vision, even as it went on all these tangents that I felt more fully than in something like Woman in the Window or Army of the Dead.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess that's a gestation period of like 6 or 7 years, really.
I wonder if Army of the Dead was just kind of like, I'm glad to be making movies again and kind of tossed off on Zack Snyder's
part. Well, I mean, the story is that they conceived of it after Dawn of the Dead or whatever, but that doesn't mean they actually wrote it. it doesn't mean that it actually existed.
I saw him say that it went from Netflix saying, yeah, sure, let's make that movie, to being filmed really quickly. The script was written really quickly.
Yeah. I had no idea it was coming out until it came out, basically. And I was like, oh, we made another one. Cool.
That's the way Netflix promotes stuff, though. Hey, there's no marketing until like a month in advance. And why would that be?
Yeah, totally. Because I don't know. You just need to know it exists at the time to consume it straight away. Yeah,
a lot. Taking the conversation way back to Army of the Dead again, since we've found our way back there. One last thing: what do we think of Dave Bautista?
It's one of his better performances. I feel like his best performance is Blade Runner. He's actually very good in Guardians of the Galaxy. He was both charming, action oriented, and empathetic in this, to the more than you would expect from this sort of thriller. I think he's a good actor.
Script.
And I think he was on good form here.
I'm actually going to... My hot take is I think he's a better actor than Dwayne Johnson.
Dude, way better. Come on.
No, a lot of people don't like...
Dwayne Johnson's just charisma.
Not even
that.
That is all
you need to have. It's true.
But also, I don't even think Dwayne Johnson has any charisma, to be honest.
No, he totally does.
He absolutely has charisma.
He has a winning smile.
He's very charming and he's very funny. He's great in Jumanji in those films, but he's not a dramatic actor.
You know there's
a
serial called Young Rock now?
Yeah.
I don't care. I generally don't
care. But yeah, Dave Bautista is totally different to Dwayne Rock because...
If we're comparing, like, you know, former WWE wrestlers who made the transition...
Right, like, he feels so real and so sincere. in this movie. It's almost like incongruous with the tone of the film to some extent. He's almost giving too good a performance for the material.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, we can just all agree that ex-WWE performers are way better than ex-UFC performers.
Oh, yeah.
So point in on that.
Yeah.
Don't do my boy The Rock like that. He's good.
He was good, making a good president.
So John Cena's good.
I mean, look, they're better than most actors. Let's be honest. It's like, what is WWE if not acting?
It's acting,
and like they pop up.
What?
Yeah. No, sorry.
But there's
I don't know. It's like a different acting school. Everyone's getting this formal training and they are just coasting by on charisma, but that's kind of cool.
Better physical performers than a lot of Hollywood actors. Look at Batista running over the craps tables.
Amazing. When he pushes the table in this, you feel it.
You
feel he can do that.
Well, who are they going to get to be a stunt double for this guy? Seriously.
Some other wrestler.
he had an inspector. He had it here.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then a big shout to Tig. Tig did a great job.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, it's just really funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Two Flicks streaming on Netflix. Felix, thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next week. Let us know what you want us to fight about. And you can check out Static Vision. And the screening's coming up at Lido and in Sydney.
Yep.
And, yeah, have a wonderful night or whenever you're listening. Enjoy movies.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Zombie. Yeah.